Get your hands off that mouse. The Andy Finn Show will be right back. This is the Andy Finn Show, and let me just complete my last thought about wanting to know and wanting at least to have some people that know through oversight with something that came out in the paper this week that should be less controversial than this information about the NSA spying program or the information about the CIA secret prisons or any of the things that the Bush administration won't tell the American people and won't tell Congress because it's a secret. There's a new report out that shows that the CIA organized a network of Cold War spies. We're going back to the late 40s, early 50s. And they used former Nazis. Okay. They knew, for example, in the late 50s, that Adolf Eichmann, the fugitive Nazi war criminal who was eventually caught in Argentina by the Israelis, I believe, that he was in Argentina. Okay. Well, there was 27,000 pages of CIA records and documents newly released recently that are now at the National Archive. And they shed some new light on this whole issue of protection. And basically what happened was because we were in a Cold War, because we were up against the Soviets, the CIA decided we were going to use former Nazis because they knew the networks, they knew what was going on in Germany and East Germany and all of that. And so it brings us to a moral question, but I'm assuming conservatives would say there's no point in bringing this up now. What's the point of revealing this now that we acted, some would say dishonorably, since the Cold War may have been a big deal, but I'm not sure it's worth turning your back on war crimes. I'm not sure how many people would make that argument. I think we could find some conservatives that would. But whatever the CIA got out of the intel they'd got from former Nazis, I suspect the U.S. would have survived the Cold War without it. And we should have prosecuted these guys. We knew they were Nazis, and we were letting them off the hook intentionally because we thought they'd be useful. Now, I'm not talking so much about that and the morality of that. I'm talking about the release of the information, because I think that what many conservatives might say is, what's the point of releasing this information now? It just gives the U.S. a black eye, and aren't you part of that blame America first crowd and all of that good stuff? Well, we've talked about that before, and we'll get to it when we talk about the UN here. And the UN is in the news again because there was a speech by the second in command behind Kofi Annan, and his name is Mark Malik Brown. He is the deputy secretary general under Kofi Annan, and he basically gave a speech on Wednesday, in which he bashed the United States. And he said that the U.S. has undermined the world body, that is the U.N., by withholding support from it and failing to defend it from the harshest critics it has here at home. That is, the Bush administration is not helping things, because there's a lot of anti-UN rhetoric in the U.S., and it's not doing anything to combat it. By the way, I happen to agree that there's a lot of anti-rhetoric about the U.N. in this country that's not doing us any good. Okay, I just heard somebody the other night, I suspect it was Fox News, I think it was John Gibson, I mean, just accepting as gospel that the U.N. is a bad organization and can't be fixed, which implies, I guess, we should get out of it. You know, there's a famous line that Gordon Liddy likes to use and callers to his show and other right-wing talk show hosts' shows, and it's get the U.S. out of the U.N. and the U.N. out of the U.S. And the logic goes like this, that the U.N. doesn't do us any good, that the world is against us and we can't get our way, so we should take our ball and go home. Well, what people fail to realize is that the UN does the US's bidding a great deal of the time. we are the most powerful country in the world, but you've got to have a place to talk about issues, and you've got to have a place to bring pressure to bear, public pressure to bear on other countries. Now, we're one of only 190-some nations in the UN, so in the General Assembly, we only get one vote just like everybody else. But a lot of the actions in the Security Council, where we are one of five permanent members that holds a veto, and we use our veto pretty liberally, as does China and Russia, or the old Soviet Union. Now, the thing about the split in America is, of all the issues I can think of, even gay marriage isn't split quite this way. It's really quite a bizarre thing to me. I understand why conservatives, Republicans, fundamentalists want an amendment to protect marriage. I don't agree with them, but I think I understand their issue. I understand a lot of the issues, the estate tax. I don't understand why the average American wants to allow the repeal of the estate tax, since it only affects, you know, less than one half of 1% of the country. But I think I understand the position of the other side on many issues. I have to say that when it comes to the UN, I don't understand their position. That is, I don't understand it on policy points. I think they're wrong on policy points. They think the U.S. doesn't get its way often enough in the UN, that our will is thwarted by the UN. And I think they're wrong about that. I think we get our way a lot. Right? There are 18 peacekeeping missions going on around the world right now. That is, the UN has got troops from a variety of countries policing 18 different hotspots. Those are 18 hotspots the U.S. doesn't have to police. Remember, we're the world policemen. So that's a help. We used it to get permission to get agreement from the world to throw Saddam Hussein out of Kuwait. Right? We tried to use it. George Bush tried to use it, like his father did, to get permission to go into Iraq, but the UN wasn't going to give it to him. And so he said, well, if the UN won't enforce its own resolutions, I will. But, you know, Kofi Annan said that that was a violation of international law. That is, he didn't have the UN's agreement to go in, and yet Bush went in anyway, claiming, remarkably, that the U.S. homeland was threatened by Saddam. But the UN haters, or the people that want the U.S. to get out of the UN, or they think it's a hopeless organization, they make a couple of spurious arguments that are worth addressing. First of all, they point out the organization is broken. That's true. It's broken and it's corrupt. Too many people from too many third world countries get cushy jobs, come into the UN, make good money, live in New York, eat in the finest restaurants, and don't do much for the people of the world. There are ways to address that kind of corruption. You don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. The other complaint you hear is that, well, look, UN peacekeepers are raping women in Africa, and so, you know, it's despicable. Yeah, that's true. That is despicable, but that's a percentage of them. And it may be that the troops aren't as disciplined as they should be. They should have additional training. That's all addressable stuff. But don't start pointing the finger at the UN troops that are raping women without pointing the finger at the U.S. troops that are doing things. Right? There are a few bad apples in every barrel. And we should deal harshly with the UN troops that are abusing their power. I'm just saying it's not a reason to tar the whole UN in the same way that I don't want to hear people tarring the whole U.S. military because of the scandals that have happened in Iraq, whether it's people being getting killed or people being sexually humiliated at Abu Ghraib. But the real issue is not these policy points about what the U.N. does and doesn't do and accomplishes and doesn't accomplish. The real issue is a red state, blue state thing, and it's about vision and it's about perspective. And it's about the paradigm you look at the world through. So if you're in a red state of mind, you tend to see anything the UN does as curtailing America's power. And you say, well, we're the most powerful country. We should be using our power. We should be projecting our power around the world. And to go to the UN and have to negotiate with countries that, you know, may not have a good record in human rights or may be set up to thwart us. They don't want us to succeed. They don't want us to solve this or that problem. You know, that'd be foolish to go talk to them. That's the red state of mind. The blue state of mind says, you know, leadership is more than exercising power through force. Leadership is exercising power through finesse. Leadership is talking to people, listening to people, understanding their perspective, and incorporating at least parts of it, and then leading because you've got their buy-in to agree. Or that you may agree to disagree about something, but you say, I really need your support here, and I will take into consideration what you've said or what you want me to do in part of the case here. That's the way you build a coalition and you get other people to go along. The problem is that in a red state of mind, you say, we got the power. Let's just do it. You know, the U.S. is being threatened. We'll go into Iraq. And the problem is we elected a red state kind of guy. We elected George W. Bush, who wouldn't know finesse if it bit him on the hand. This is a guy who sees the world in black and white. After 9/11, you're either with us or you're with the terrorists. No, no, it'd be possible, wouldn't it, to be neutral? When it comes to anything that Bush deals with, his world is black and white. There's a right answer and a wrong answer for everything. He does not see the subtleties. As he once said, he doesn't do nuance. Well, I'm sorry, but nuance is what diplomacy is all about. And so you do have to listen. You may still do what you believe is right, but you need to be respectful and listen to other countries. And you might learn something to boot. That's the blue state of mind. That's how you lead effectively, is to work with people as opposed to telling them, we're doing this, you better come along, or we'll throw money your way, whatever we say to the coalition of the willing. And so far, in the 21st century, we've been using the red state approach. We've been using the stick, not the carrot. We've been using the George W. Bush bull in the china shop approach. Witness putting John Bolton at the UN. Now, Bolton reacted to this speech, and he'll be gone by the end of the year, which Kofi Annan knows full well. Bolton was given a recess appointment because Bush couldn't get his nomination through the Senate. Do you know how hard it is to get your choice for UN secretary rejected by the Senate? Every Congress gives the president his choice, except Bush said, let me send the most contrary guy I can to go argue with the rest of the countries. No, wrong plan, wrong idea. You're the president, but that doesn't mean you get to be an idiot. So when Malik Brown gave this speech that accused the U.S. of not defending the U.N. within the U.S., and undermining the UN, Bolton said, even though the target of the speech was the United States, the victim, I fear, will be the United Nations. And he called on Kofi Annan to repudiate the speech, or that the UN would have to live with, quote, adverse consequences. Well, Kofi Annan backed up his deputy. And so now the U.S. is in a little snit with the U.N.